Listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you The Catholic Doctors, discussing medicine in light of church teaching. And now, The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek.
Welcome to The Catholic Doctors Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820. This is your co-host in studio, Dr. Michael Parker, with Dr. Will Turek. Will, how are you?
I am just great.
It's good to see you again.
It's good seeing you. And consistently, we've been hitting it every Wednesday.
Well, pretty much.
I know.
I've had a fairly open schedule. I haven't been driving back and forth too much on I-71, which has been good, but that's about to change. Let's get a little busier here in the next 2-3 weeks. But
there's more babies being born up there in Cleveland. Well,
there's lots of babies being born everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, but this is a slow time of the year for the babies. You know, we're waiting on the Super Bowl babies to come.
Oh, yeah.
In October, November. Yeah. October, November. So
they get bored with the Super Bowl and they have to have something to do, right?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. That's what we all have to do. So, you know, we get our rest when we can, right?
Yeah.
So, well, you know, we've done a number of shows about healing, the healing process and everything else. Mm-hmm. Our last show, we talked about pornography.
Yeah.
And
healing from that.
Healing from post-abortion, mm-hmm. A number of different things. But, and one of the common themes that runs through this is how a return to faith or a return to some type of virtue or grace has been a central portion of many of these healing stories.
Right.
You know, especially, you know, when we talked about it with when we talked to Matt Fratt about pornography, almost every story that was in the book that he and his wife wrote was, you know, about how they had to, one, learn to that this problem was not their own,
mm-hmm.
two, how they had to learn how to forgive, and three, how they had to rely on their faith and their Catholic faith, especially the sacraments, to get through all of this.
Right. It comes down to surrender. It comes down to grace. It comes down to mercy. It comes down. Those are all things that are central to any sort of reconciliation, any reparative process.
Right. But many people would not want to think that that was a part of modern psychiatric medicine.
No, I think that's really something that gets shoved in the back burner because it's about choices. It's
right.
About, you know, you choose hamburgers. I like pizza. You choose to, you know, sin this way. I choose to sin in that way, but it's not sin. Sin is a negative term. It's a term that, you know, has a moral, you know, weight to it. And we don't like that as a modern society.
Well, what we're gonna find out with our guest that we're gonna have on our show today is we're gonna talk about the value of virtues in the healing from psychiatric illnesses or from other various life traumas or mm-hmm. events. And we are definitely pleased to have back on the show Dr. Aaron Curiati, who is a health psychiatrist at UC Irvine Health, who specializes in adult psychiatry services. His clinical interests include general adult psychiatry, medical ethics, and psychiatry and spirituality. Dr. Curiati, welcome to the Catholic Doctors Show on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820.
Thanks. It's great to be here with you, Will and Michael.
Well, Aaron, if you don't mind me calling you Aaron.
Please.
You know, when I was in psychiatry 27 or 28 years ago, you know, a lot of the talk at that time was about how we were just coming up with all these medications that were being used to help treat people with various psychiatric illnesses, and there was, you know, some type of, you know, mechanism for some psychotherapy that was just coming out at that time or was evolving in that time. But psychiatry has kind of taken on, or psychology and psychiatry has kind of taken on a new evolution over the years. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of psychology and how it's come down to where we are right now.
Sure. There are some interesting developments that we've seen in the last few years, but before we get there, maybe a little backstory would be helpful.
Sure.
Really, for the first 100 years of psychiatry and clinical psychology, starting with the work of Sigmund Freud and the early psychoanalysts, the focus was very heavily on disease, on mental disorder, on pathology, on neurosis, on what could go wrong with the mind rather than on what could go right. So the focus tended to be on people's vulnerabilities and their weaknesses rather than on their assets. And of course that makes some sense, because people present for clinical attention or for help from psychiatrists or psychologists precisely because they're suffering from some kind of problem, depression, anxiety, you know, strange thoughts that are, you know, impacting their behavior and so forth. So we look at that. We want to know what causes that, and then we want to know how to try to fix it, whether through, you know, manipulating the brain chemistry through medication or medical interventions, or through talk therapy, psychotherapy, and that's where the focus was really for most of the 20th century. And you could say that was a form of what some people have called negative psychology, negative meaning it focused on disease and disorder.
Right.
But in more recent years, there's been something of a shift. It hasn't sort of completely caught on, but we're beginning to see it gain ground. A research and clinical movement that goes by the name of positive psychology. And the birth of positive psychology is sort of interesting. It started with very influential psychologist named Martin Seligman. Seligman was former president of American Psychological Association. He's well known in our field for developing something called the learned helplessness theory of depression. We're not going to get into that, but suffice it to say he was a well-known figure. And he's sitting one day at breakfast with his 7-year-old daughter as he tells the story. And she spilled her milk or her cereal or something. And he sort of lost his cool and, I don't know, came down a little too hard on her. And she turned to him and said, "Daddy, you know, you've been studying psychology all these years. You ought to know something about being kind to people." And, you know, out of the mouth of babes.
Yeah, really?
And he said it struck him like a bolt of lightning in that moment, that it was true that he had studied psychology for decades. And he didn't know a darn thing, at least nothing from his professional work and his research. He didn't know a darn thing about being kind. Because, again, the focus had always been on disease, disorder, and pathology, not on human strengths, character strengths, and virtues. And he realized in that moment that it was high time for modern psychiatry, modern psychology, to use the tools of, you know, scientific inquiry to study in a rigorous way what are the traits or habits or virtues or character strengths that make for human health and human flourishing, right?
Right.
And that's how this whole movement sort of got going. We had a powerful, well-respected figure within psychology that said, okay, it's high time to do this, and people agreed, and they got behind it. And we have now a really interesting body of research looking at various virtues. How do they develop? What kind of effect do they have on our mental and physical health? And the work that has come out of that whole movement is really interesting and really promising, and hopefully we'll have some time on the show today maybe to discuss some of the specific findings there.
Sure.
Well, you know, isn't it interesting that how everything old is new again, you know? I mean, we talk about human virtues. The Greeks talked about this at length and then set the stage for Christ. And now we're rediscovering this all of a sudden in the 21st century again.
Right.
That's right. And I'm glad you pointed that out, because as it happens, as they began sort of digging around and getting this research project going to look at character strengths and virtues, what they found was really a rediscovery of something that has a long history in the West, both, you know, philosophically from the ancient Greeks, and then carried through also in the Christian, Jewish and Christian intellectual traditions. Basically, what they did, and this was published back in 2004, is Seligman and his co-author Christopher Peterson published a huge book, sort of the Bible of positive psychology. It's called Character Strengths and Virtues, and it's they called it a manual of the sanities. It's sort of an antidote or the flip side to the DSM, you know, which focuses on disease and disorder.
Right.
And in this book, they take what they consider to be the six main virtues that are most conducive to human happiness and human mental and physical health. They distill the various virtues down to six, and the six are the following: wisdom, courage, justice, temperance, what they call humanity, which, you know, some of the sub virtues include love and kindness. And then the final one they call transcendence. And if you look at what they mean by that, there's elements of gratitude, of hope, of what they term spirituality, appreciation of beauty. So you look at these six, and you think about the last one, transcendence, as being sort of analogous to hope or to certain aspects of faith. And what you see are the four cardinal virtues, right, known from the time of Plato and Aristotle, and then commented on even by the great Christian thinkers, by Augustine and Aquinas in the West and many others. And then you see qualities that are at least analogous to what St. Paul called what the Christian tradition following St. Paul calls the theological virtues,
right.
Faith, hope, and love.
Right.
And so this really was a rediscovery, and it's interesting just to note that they approached this from, okay, let's do some empirical work, let's do some historical surveys, let's do cross-cultural surveys to see what kinds of traits are valued cross-culturally, Eastern and Western, by religious and non-religious individuals, and then let's look at empirical research on, you know, what these traits do or don't do in terms of health and human flourishing. And this is what they found. You know, they rediscovered Thomas Aquinas.
They're like, oh, look, there's a book on the wall. It's called the Summa. Look at that. Wow. It has all this stuff in it.
The first book of psychology.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, this is gaining traction, certainly in mainstream psychology, and probably has had less of an impact on psychiatry, on sort of the medical side of things. But there are certainly people within my profession that are beginning to take an interest in this movement and do some interesting research work as well. So this is another example, as I take it, of the fact that when we really use the tools of science, scientific research, and medicine well, what we discover is that truth is one, right? God who created the world is the same God who revealed himself to us. And the truths of revelation, rightly understood, are perfectly coherent with the truths of scientific discoveries, rightly understood. And faith and reason are compatible. And this is, I think, a really interesting example from sort of the social sciences and medicine of a kind of convergence that you find when you do careful scientific study of something like the virtues.
We're so smart, we're dumb.
Right. You're listening to the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. And we have Dr. Aaron Curiati from UC Irvine Health talking about the development of virtues and how this can help in psychological and psychiatric healing. And we talked about this being a positive psychology, and in negative psychology, if my understanding is correct, the patient was basically looked at as a victim. They've been a victim of their life circumstances or from abuse from other people or trauma or something like that. And so they just learned to, that it wasn't their fault, and so that they could keep going, they could just go on because nothing was their fault. They were all just victims of this. What is different about that in positive psychology? How would you go about treating a patient or helping a patient along psychologically or psychiatrically through positive psychology? What's the method that you go through?
Sure. And I would point out that actually these two things probably need to go hand in hand, and that one without the other is going to be imbalanced. You know, positive psychology without understanding, you know, psychopathology or so-called negative psychology is perhaps going to be a little bit too optimistic and is not going to, you know, recognize the degree of human brokenness or fragility or vulnerability. But as you pointed out, a negative psychology without the positive psychology simply looks at the person's past, and that through that lens, you tend to develop a sort of deterministic notion that, okay, I understand that I am the way I am now because of what happened to me when I was younger or the trauma that I experienced or the fact that I had, you know, very poor early attachment relationship to my parents or whatever the case may be. While that understanding, that insight can be helpful in the process of healing, if that's the exclusive focus, then people, as you pointed out, can feel like they're simply a victim of their circumstances.
Right.
I'm determined to sort of be this way. I couldn't have turned out otherwise. And what positive psychology introduces is rather than just exclusively focusing on the past and how it's determined my present, it really orients us more toward the future. It asks, okay, I have some vulnerabilities, but what are my assets? What are my strengths? How can I cultivate and develop those so that my strengths become even stronger and so that I can put my assets to work for me in terms of moving my life forward in a more positive direction? And I think it gives people a sense of self-efficacy, of possibility, of it highlights the fact that we are free, mm-hmm. And our freedom is conditioned by all these other factors,
right.
And we can grow and develop and, in a sense, become more free as we exercise the virtues, that pursuing things that are good for me, pursuing things that are healthy for me, become easier as I develop the virtues.
Right. It sounds like with negative psychology, it's kind of a, I kind of stay where I am and I accept who I am. But with positive psychology, I actually move myself along a pathway towards happiness and almost a transcendent happiness, sort of like what Father Spitzer talks about in
the
his four levels
of happiness.
That's exactly
what I was thinking
as part
about.
Of the healing.
Yeah, that's right. And if you move up Father Spitzer's four levels, what you see is you begin with a sort of focus on my own pleasure.
Right.
Linguini.
This is what positive psychologists call this hedonic happiness.
Right.
That's where we get the word hedonism. Okay, I eat a piece of very fine chocolate, and I get a little spritz of dopamine in my brain, and I have momentary hedonic pleasure. And this is enticing. It gives me a little bit of short-term boost. But if this is where my exclusive focus is, what happens? Long-term, it wears me down. It's not good for my health. And this can be measured from things in terms of my mental health to things down on the biological level in terms of inflammation in my body. And the positive psychologists introduce what Spitzer would call one of the higher levels of happiness, what is sometimes called eudaimonic happiness. It's a Greek word for happiness or flourishing that Aristotle used. And this happiness is associated with finding connection with other people through serving a cause that's greater than or outside of myself, through finding a sense of meaning and purpose in my life that goes beyond simply being self-serving. And what you find is that over the long haul, this increases my mental and physical health, my social resources. I become more resilient. People who develop this form of happiness live longer.
Right.
And they positively impact other people.
Yeah. Don't we find that in people, so in positive psychology, psychiatry, we're moving ourselves along this pathway of the virtues here. And that kind of ties in with neuroscience that we know about the neurotransmitters in the brain and what certain activities that we do that lead to the increase of neurotransmitters that we're trying to increase with psychotropic drugs, such as, self-care through meditation, exercise, diet, but also getting out and helping other people and coming outside of ourselves that increase these things that kind of almost in a way help to cure the depression or other ills that they may be feeling.
That's right. That's right. I'll mention in this context a really interesting study that was conducted at Harvard. It's been going now for decades. And this was a study of adult development following a cohort of Harvard graduates. At the time, when the study began, Harvard was all male. And so all the people in the study are men. And what did this study find as these men aged, and most of them have since passed away? Well, their conclusion was that the most important factor in terms of healthy adult development, post-college, in terms of a person finding happiness and flourishing, is the quality of their relationships. And the study concluded, this is a quote from their findings, says, happiness is love, right? That was the bottom line of this sort of major 75-year project.
Wow.
Harvard. Which has faint echoes that I think Christians would recognize
would hear,
and
right. In First John or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
You know, what I find interesting, and we talked about this before the show, is that, this negative psychology is sort of a kind of a Lutheran sort of way of looking at man, that we're this dung heap, that the grace of God covers over us like snow, right? And then we, as a Catholic, contradistinction to that, grace improves upon nature, and that we're actually transformed, like the Eastern Catholic. You're Maronite, so as Eastern Catholics, they talk about divinization, that we become God.
Sure.
Yeah, that's right. And the Protestant reformers, particularly Luther and Calvin, had a notion of human nature that basically saw human nature as so totally depraved or corrupted by original sin that we were completely incapable of doing anything even remotely good on our own without the help of grace. And so they were emphasizing grace, which was important. We cannot, and Catholics and Orthodox believe the same thing, that we cannot save ourselves apart from God's grace, that the supernatural virtues of faith, hope, and love that are necessary for salvation are only given to us and infused by God's grace. We cannot sort of conjure them by our own effort, by our own, you know, will. But at the same time, the Catholic and Eastern Orthodox notion is that we have to cooperate with that grace, that our freedom does play a role, and that human nature, while wounded and impaired by original sin, is not so totally corrupted that we're incapable completely of doing anything good, of orienting our will away from evil and toward something good. So, so there's, in the Catholic tradition, there's a sense that the human virtues, aside from faith, hope, and love, the virtues of fortitude, the virtue of a practical wisdom, or temperance, which helps me to channel and control my appetites and impulses, that these things can be cultivated and developed, and certainly we need grace to cultivate and develop them to a heroic degree. You know, there's a sort of a Christian fortitude that will allow someone to face something like martyrdom. But there's also a human fortitude that can be the foundation upon which the supernatural virtues are built. Right? And that's, I think, another interesting aspect of positive psychology. It tries to find the good in human nature, not denying that there's disorder and pathology and an inclination towards, you know, evil and self-destruction and the rest, but not emphasizing that exclusively in the way that some of the Protestant thinkers did, and saying, okay, well, for all that, we still have some internal resources to work with here, and what can we learn about how people develop those? What can we learn about their effects when they do develop them on people's health and their life,
well, to that point, Aaron, how successful is the positive psychiatric approach to mental illness or mental health compared to previous negative psychology?
Well, research suggests that some very simple exercises to help people develop these virtues can have actually pretty significant effects on mental health outcomes, on suicide risk reduction of people that are maybe at high risk for suicide because of a serious mood disorder, let's say, or on levels of depression and anxiety. So Aaron Beck, who's well known in my field for developing cognitive therapy for depression, he did a major study looking long-term at suicide risk factors. He followed individuals that had been hospitalized for a suicide attempt or for suicidal ideation, followed them out for the next 10 years. So this was a cohort of people that were very high risk to end their own lives, you know, in the next 10 years. Sure. And some of them died by suicide and others survived. And he compared the two and looked at all the things that psychiatrists would typically look at. What, you know, mental illness, what were their diagnoses, drug and alcohol use, socioeconomic factors, all those sort of typical things that we tend to measure when we're looking at risk factors for suicide. And he found that while many of those things were important, the one factor that was most predictive of whether or not a person who was at high risk ended up taking their own life or not was not how sick they were or whether they were in physical pain or the number of symptoms that they had. It was whether or not they reported a sense of hopelessness.
Right.
So we see that the central role of this virtue of hope, and there's no quick and easy prescription to instill in people hope, but we know that religious faith is perhaps not the only thing that gives people hope. There's certain forms of human or sort of natural hope that would be available to people aside from, you know, a worldview that included faith or the transcendent. Right. But obviously, for many people, where do they find their source of strength? Their source of hope is going to be in their religious faith and practice, and in the community of faith that they're a part of. So, I mean, that's a very tangible outcome, right? It's hard to think of a worse mental health outcome than suicide.
Sure.
And what Beck found was that this was the central kind of issue for people that were suicidal.
Aaron, if we're running out of time, we have about 2 minutes left. If people want to learn more about the positive psychiatry movement, are there certain resources that you would recommend to them, or do you have a resource of your own that you would recommend?
Sure. So a couple of things. In general, positive psychology is pretty well expounded by Martin Seligman. He has some shorter books on the market. I mentioned the giant tome, Character, Strengths, and Virtues, but he has some shorter books on happiness that are very helpful. For more on the virtue of gratitude, I recommend the work of Robert Emmons, who's a psychologist at, I believe he's at UC Davis now, and he's done some really interesting work on gratitude, and he has resources, some articles and talks and so forth available online on helping people to cultivate that virtue. And then finally, on the virtue of forgiveness, for mental health practitioners or psychologists, there's a book called Forgiveness Therapy, written by two of my colleagues and friends, Bob Enright and Richard Fitzgibbons, have written a very, very fine book on forgiveness. And then for non-practitioners who just want a short and quick and easy book on forgiveness, I recommend the book Wounds in the Heart by Dr. Javier Schlatter. And that's a quick 100-page, very practical read to help people work through the process of forgiveness.
Wow.
So those are two virtues, forgiveness and gratitude, that have received some very interesting attention in positive psychology. And those are a couple of resources to introduce people to what's been done.
Very good.
It's been done there.
Dr. Aaron Curiati, we are grateful and want to thank you for being on the Catholic Doctor Show here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. And we wish you continued success in your work out there at UC Irvine and also in the study of positive psychiatry. It sounds like a wonderful new addition for treatment and, of course, fits well with our Catholic faith. And we want to thank you for coming on the show. You've been listening to the Catholic Doctor Show, a production of St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. Until next week, we hope your week is happy, healthy, and holy.
God bless.
The Catholic Doctors is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of The Catholic Doctors with Dr. Michael Parker and Dr. Will Turek are available at stgabrielradio.com. Veni, so-